You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back in, everybody, to the Locked On Orioles podcast. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. Well, hope you enjoyed Game 1 of the World Series. The Fall Classic is underway with the Dodgers taking it over the Rays in Game 1 last night. We're going to talk about that here on this episode of the pod, and then a little later get to some Orioles talk. We are going to continue that conversation about the Orioles swing starters. We started it yesterday with Paul Mancano of Orioles All Access over in Masson. Yesterday, we talked about Thomas Eshelman and Asher Wojciechowski. Today, we'll talk Wade LeBlanc and Jorge Lopez coming up a little later on the pod and give them some grades for their season. Again, that all comes up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. So in the World Series last night, final score Dodgers 8 and Rays 3 as Los Angeles takes Game 1 over Tampa. Clayton Kershaw was really, really good on the hill for the Dodgers in Game 1. Now, Dave Roberts did pull him after 6 innings at only 78 pitches, but he was cruising through those 6 innings. 6 innings pitched, 1 run on 2 hits, 8 Ks and 1 walk. The only run that Kershaw allowed in the ballgame last night was a solo home run hit by Kevin Kiermaier in the top of the fifth that made it a 2-1 game at that point. Of course, after Cody Bellinger's fourth inning two-run shot off of Tyler Glasnow had given the Dodgers the lead. And on the other side, it was a little bit of a struggle for Tyler Glasnow. He only gave up 3 hits, but he allowed 6 runs over 4 1/3 innings, 8 strikeouts, and 6 walks for the right-hander Glasnow. And the Rays bullpen gave up a couple more as well. But things really unraveled for the Rays in the fifth inning. Dodgers got 4 in the fifth, added 2 in the sixth, and pulled away for that 8-3 victory. And of course, Mookie Betts, you know, really stole the show in the ballgame last night. And the Dodgers showed that, you know, I still think this is going to be a good series, and I'm still taking the Rays in 7, even after Game 1. Not going to change my prediction. But what Mookie Betts was able to do last night, stole a couple of bases, went 2-for-4, hit a home run, drew a walk, made some good catches in the outfield. You know, he is the player that, you know, the Rays don't have really anybody that can match up with him. And the Dodgers have a couple guys like Bellinger and Kershaw too. But Betts specifically, he is the best player that is playing in this 2020 World Series. And he definitely showed it last night in Game 1. And it just makes you think, why in the world did the Boston Red Sox trade him this offseason? You think about Boston, yeah, they were bad, but if you add Mookie to that team, and maybe they're a little healthier in the starting rotation, they're probably a playoff team in 2020. But instead, they trade him to the Dodgers. He signs a huge extension in LA, and Mookie is going to be there being a great player. He's one of the 5 best players, no doubt, in the game right now. And he's in that conversation for one of the best, no doubt about that either. And he's going to be in LA for a long time, but the Dodgers do take a 1-0 series lead and really dominated that game last night. You know, they took the early lead on Glasnow, and that was pretty much it after they got the big inning in the fifth. Rays did try to rally. They got 2 in the seventh, and it took a kind of a lucky double play on a liner that got the Dodgers out of that seventh inning. Could have been an even bigger inning for Tampa to get them back in it, but the Dodgers have a 1-0 series lead. Game 2 is tonight, Wednesday night, 8:08 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox. It's going to be Blake Snell, the left-hander, goes for the Rays. And then Tony Gonsolin is going to get the start for the Dodgers. The rookie right-hander will go out there for L.A. I think the Rays have a good chance to jump on Gonsolin early and hopefully for them tie this series up at 1 game apiece tonight, but should be a good series that continues here tonight. But flipping over to the Orioles, as I mentioned back at the top, yesterday we had part one of our conversation with Paul Mancano, the host of Orioles All Access over at Masson, as we talked about the Orioles swing starters yesterday and gave them grades for the 2020 season in our Orioles report card grade series. And yesterday we talked about Thomas Eshelman and his improvements in 2020. And then we talked about Asher Wojciechowski and his disappointing season that ended with a DFA, and we'll see if he stays in the Orioles organization. But today we'll talk about the two other guys who kind of fit into the swing starter category. We will talk about Wade LeBlanc, the veteran lefty who only made 6 starts this year, then got injured, missed the rest of the season. And he is a free agent after this year, but, you know, he is healthy, should be ready for 2021 spring training. And maybe he's a guy the Orioles do bring back on a minor league contract. So we will talk about that and talk about his 6 starts that he made. And then we're going to get a little deeper into the right-hander Jorge Lopez, who the Orioles got off of waivers from the Royals in the middle of the season this year. And he came in and was really up and down for the O's, pitched out of the pen, and got a good amount of starts as well as kind of, you know, his tryout really to be a part of the 2021 Orioles, whether it's as a long man or as maybe that number 5 starter. So we kind of get into, you know, what our feelings are on Jorge Lopez. And then at the end, we talk about these 4 guys as a whole and who we think might throw the most innings for the Orioles in 2021. So that all coming up with Paul Mancano of Orioles All Access at Masson. We're talking Wade LeBlanc and Jorge Lopez coming up after the break. Built Bar has come back even better. The protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, well, now it has even more flavors that make it taste even better than it already did. They've got new flavors like caramel brownie, lemon almond cheesecake, and carrot cake, that kind of stuff. You know, you start thinking about fall flavors, those fit right in right there for Built Bar. They've still got the 12 original flavors like peanut butter, mint brownie, toffee almond, but the bar's still covered 100% in chocolate, soft and easy to chew. But they don't just taste great, they're also good for you. That's the best part about Built Bar as well. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for a keto diet as well. You talk about the peanut butter bar, it's got 19 grams of protein and just 180 calories while only 5 grams of sugar. This bar is delicious and good for you as well. So go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. We flip to another guy who the Orioles got on waivers, and it was a guy who they got this year who was a really interesting pickup, and that was Jorge Lopez, who came over from the Royals after 2 years ago coming 3 outs away from a perfect game in a Royals uniform. That has been the peak of his major league career so far. He had a rough 2019 and a really rough start to 2020, and that, of course, landed him on waivers and with the Orioles. And, you know, not that he was great, not that he was awful, he was just kind of there, but I think he at least put himself again in the conversation for that number 5 / you know, long relief role going into next year.
Yeah, I think I am probably a little bit lower on Jorge Lopez than most, just because he didn't give Brandon Hyde what they needed the most, which was depth. He could not go deep into games and deep into starts when they needed him to do that near the end of the year, when all these guys were banged up and they just needed to eat innings. And it became apparent in his final couple starts of the season. I think to this final start of the season against Toronto in that series near the end of the year, and they just needed him to go deep and he couldn't get out of the third inning. He did have a couple quality starts along the way. He you know, that kind of inconsistency that you mentioned, he can have some highs like the getting close to a perfect game a couple of years ago. And I think two of his starts were quality starts. So 6 innings or more with 3 earned runs or fewer. But at the same time, he would have some starts where he just could not command the strike zone. And for a guy who's maybe 24, 23, you know, you can live with that. But for a guy who has bounced around, been on a couple different teams, been in the Brewers organization, the Royals organization, now the Orioles, and he's going to be 28 by the start of next season, that's a little bit tougher of a pill to swallow.
Yeah, and he's a guy, you know, who – kind of like Eshelman, you know, is just not going to strike guys out too often. He's a guy who plays to contact. The difference between these two pitchers, that, you know, they're around the same age. They were both second round picks. You know, they both maybe haven't lived up to their expectations from when they were drafted. The difference is the stuff that these two guys have, you know, when we compare these two right-handed pitchers. You know, for Eshelman, soft tossing righty, he's going to go breaking balls. He's going to try to get you to hit, you know, soft grounders. for Jorge Lopez, you know, he's going to throw that fastball, you know, up there around 95 sometimes. And, you know, he averages that fastball around 94. It moves a whole lot. It's essentially like a two-seam sinker that he throws most of the time. And, you know, that pitch can get a lot of ground balls. And, you know, I mentioned the start for him for the Royals when he went eight perfect innings and went into the ninth of the perfect game. His best start of the year with the Orioles, he went seven innings, allowed one run on five hits against the Braves in that series win back on September 14th, struck out three and walked two in that game. That's where he's going to be good, where that fastball is just darting everywhere and he's getting guys to just smack it into the ground basically all day and get a lot of ground ball outs. And he can do that. The issue is when it's not doing that, it's darting out of the strike zone or it's darting into the middle of the plate and he's walking a lot of guys and he's giving up home runs as well. So we'll see, you know, with Lopez, I ended up on his season, you know, kind of giving him the average. I gave him a C plus, you know, he's a waiver claim who the Orioles really didn't expect much from, but kind of liked the stuff. And, you know, it was a year to basically, yeah, let's give him some starts and see what he's got. I think, you know, Eshelman definitely had a better season, but I think the two of them kind of go into 2021 on the same plane. Whereas I think the two of them, at least, you know, for the beginning part of the season before the Orioles start to think about the next crop of pitchers that may come up, I think these two are going to be battling it out for a number five starter role next year. And I think for Lopez, you know, that's why his grade is at least at a C plus, because I feel like he did enough to put himself in that conversation.
I had him as a C minus. So it's funny. I was higher on Eshelman and lower on Lopez with both these guys. But yeah, I mean, it is going to be interesting. And the first hurdle that they have to clear is making it staying on the roster through December, because the Rule 5 draft is coming up. We assume it's going to still go on as planned, whether it happens in person or not. But usually it's the last day of the winter meetings, which was supposed to be in Dallas this year. And the Orioles have to set their 40-man roster by November 20th. So they are going to have to squeeze a lot of guys in. They have to add Yusniel Diaz. They have to add Alexander Wells, I think Zach Lowther. So some of these guys who are right on the fringes of the roster are not going to make it. And I think the first hurdle that Eshelman and Lopez have to clear is being able to make it through. Now, they could be placed on waivers, not get claimed, and stay in the organization and still come back in Sarasota in February battling for a spot. But the three guys that we've talked about so far, I think all three of them are candidates to be placed on waivers. And Mike Elias is going to have some tough decisions when it comes to who he really trusts to stay on the roster long-term, who he tries to sneak through waivers and hope that they stick around and no team claims them.
Yeah, the 40-man roster crunch is going to get really, really interesting for the Orioles over the next month. You mentioned 1 month until the Orioles have to set that 40-man for the Rule 5 draft, so it should be interesting there. The last guy we're going to talk about is a guy who, you know, I guess technically at least in a few days or whenever, you know, he officially becomes a free agent, will not be in the Orioles organization because it was just a one-year deal. But that is the left-hander Wade LeBlanc, who, of course, you know, made six starts for the Orioles and then had that elbow issue in his sixth start, the first inning of that one, I believe, and came out of the game, and he was done for the year. He was on a one-year deal. The Orioles could certainly bring him back. I don't think we know exactly when, you know, he would be ready again at this point for a 2021 season. But you know, we put him in the category with Tommy Malone, and you know, we didn't do a Malone breakdown here in this report card series because he did end with another organization, of course, being traded to the Braves. But, you know, LeBlanc, 36 years old, he came in an 8.06 ERA. You know, his last couple of starts were really bad. You know, the first two were a little bit better, and he looked like he was going to be solid, at least through those first two starts. But, you know, the question for LeBlanc, and I give him a C, you know, we really didn't get to see too much from Wade LeBlanc this season. But I think the question is, does Mike Elias think about bringing him back or a guy like him back to the team next year, you know, especially if he's healthy enough to pitch, you know, at least half of next season?
Yeah, I mean, he fits into the same category. You mentioned Tommy Malone, of a crafty lefty and a veteran guy who's on the wrong side of 30 that the Orioles were looking to flip And it worked out for one, worked out for Malone. They were able to flip him at the deadline. But LeBlanc, obviously, because of that injury, they weren't able to get the kind of return first on the field in terms of production. But then they also obviously weren't able to flip him for trade assets. LeBlanc, I think, is tough because he is going to be 36 next season. And that is much different from a 31. You know, I think the Orioles are still probably going to add a starting pitcher, a veteran starting pitcher, this offseason to fill out their rotation and try to turn another guy into a trade chip. But it's tough for me to say that that guy could be Wade LeBlanc, just because not only did he have that injury, but also he did not perform particularly well when he was healthy. In terms of his injury, you mentioned, you know, not knowing exactly when, how that might affect him because he was shut down for the year. But I think about a couple months ago, roughly, it was during his rehab process. I had him on All Access and he said he could have come back in theory by the end of the season. So I expect most likely he'll be healthy going into next spring training, wherever that may be. I don't think it's going to be Baltimore, however, but he filled their requirement, not on the field, but in the clubhouse. He was exactly who they wanted him to be. He's a stand-up citizen, or a very good guy and a veteran for that starting rotation. That was, you know, is it constantly churning over and adding young pieces. So LeBlanc, I gave a lower grade. I gave a C minus for him. You know, I think that he is probably most likely done in Baltimore.
Yeah. And you never know, they could sign him or a guy like him. You know, you would think maybe another crafty veteran to a minor league deal, maybe, you know, a lot closer to spring training, just to bring in and give him a shot. Because if you remember, Tommy Malone was on that same kind of minor league deal. And then all of a sudden he was the Orioles opening day starter and they flipped him for two prospects to the Braves. So you never know if one of those could happen again. And you know, LeBlanc's going to want to be back in the majors in 2021. And he still feels like he has outs to get. And you know, you look a little deeper into his stats last season, the ERA was not good, but he did not get hit very hard last year. He was in the almost 90th percentile on the barrel rate, the exit velocity, and the hard hit percentage against him, which means when he was getting, you know, some of those tough starts and five or six earned runs, he was kind of getting dinked and dunked sometimes as well. And he still definitely has some stuff to at least keep some batters off balance, but we will see, you know, with him being a free agent. And as you said, probably being healthy for spring training, we'll see where he ends up. But Paul, thank you so much for joining us to talk some pitchers. You know, the one last thing I want to do on these report card series episodes, you know, we talk about, you know, four different guys and want to ask one question at the end that kind of encompasses all of them. So we talked about Eshelman, Wojciechowski, Lopez, and LeBlanc today. Your best guess, who do you think throws the most innings of those four guys in an Orioles uniform in 2021?
That's a good question. I'm going to go Thomas Eshelman. I think that, like I said, I don't think LeBlanc comes back. I think Wojciechowski probably gets stashed somewhere if he can get through the offseason still on the roster. And I think between Lopez and Eshelman, I would probably trust Eshelman. And I think the coaching staff, given the fact they just have a little bit more of a track record with him, Brendan Hyde, you know, has had him for more than the brief stint that Lopez has been on the team. I think that they will trust Eshelman more likely and more often, I'll say, in 2021.
And I think it's definitely down the answer to that question to Eshelman or Lopez. I think I would take Lopez, honestly. I think just with the stuff he has, he might get a shot, but we will see. But Paul, thank you so much for coming on, talking some swing starters. And, you know, it was nice to see Eshelman kind of turn it around a little bit. And hey, you know, maybe in a full season, he is a 3.9 ERA pitcher. And the Orioles would love to have that for the next couple of years. But thanks again, Paul.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Thanks for allowing me to talk about the roster crunch with the Rule 5 draft. I mean, that is incredibly boring stuff, I think, to most people, but I find it fascinating. So letting me talk about it.
It's going to be very fascinating over the next month to see what the Orioles do. And I do think there's going to be some disappointed fans, because I think there's some names that people, you know, think are locks for next year that maybe maybe not so much.
Yeah, going to be interesting. I probably won't be in Dallas to see it, which is honestly okay by me because it's kind of a boring spectacle. But you know what? At least we can all stream it somewhere on MLB.com.
So again, our thanks to Paul Mancano of Orioles All Access. He hosts that program over at Masson. For joining us for the two-part conversation there about the Orioles swing starters. Again, you go back to Tuesday's episode. We talked about Thomas Eshelman and Asher Wojciechowski. And then today, of course, Wade LeBlanc and Jorge Lopez. And I do think, you know, LeBlanc is a guy, you know, the Orioles could bring back on a minor league deal going into next spring training. He will be healthy. He is a free agent. I think they could bring him back and give him a shot. And hey, you know, maybe he does what he did last year and what Tommy Malone did last year, come in on those minor league deals and win a spot in the rotation. It's you know, never a bad thing to have more competition in the rotation for these younger guys and to have a veteran like LeBlanc. You know, he's 36 years old. He's pitched a lot of places. He's pitched in a lot of different situations. He's had a lot of success in his career, and I'm sure he helped out the Orioles young pitchers in 2020, and he could do it again in 2021. As far as Lopez goes, you know, I think I'm a little higher on Jorge Lopez than Paul is. You could probably, you know, hear that. We talked about it in our conversation. And I know Lopez isn't a big strikeout guy, and he's never going to be a top of the rotation guy, but I would be fine with Jorge Lopez, you know, starting 2021 as the Orioles' number five starter. I think there's still some promise there from the right-hander. That fastball moves a lot. He's got some good stuff, and I think if they can hone it in just a little bit, he could be solid for the O's moving forward, but we will see. Obviously, you know, what we talked about there at the end, the big, big question is how do these guys stay on the 40-man roster? Because the Orioles have a roster crunch coming up in less than a month. They got to make some decisions to protect some guys in the minors from the Rule 5 draft and put them on the 40-man roster. You know, a lock to get on there is Yusnail Diaz. Then you got have guys like Zach Pop, Rylan Bannon, Zach Lowther, and we've talked about all those guys and how they're going to fit in on the 40-man and if the Orioles will protect them and who they will, you know, cut loose to make space for some of their younger prospects. So it will be interesting to see as we approach that deadline, November 20th, to set the 40-man for the Rule 5 draft. So it will definitely be interesting, and we'll get into that a lot more in future episodes about what we think the Orioles will do with the 40-man roster as we get closer and closer to this year's winter meetings. But we still got Orioles talk to go, plenty of stuff to talk about this offseason, as we also keep checking in on the World Series. And when we're back with you tomorrow, we will do a little recap of Game 2 of the World Series, hoping my pick looks a little better and the Rays can even things up tonight against the Dodgers. And we'll talk some Orioles as well. We've got one more group to go in our Orioles report card grade series. Go back through the archives. All these episodes over the last few weeks since the season has ended have been very, very good. And we've got one more group to go. Kind of grouped together the last five pitchers who, you know, didn't really have a spot in these other groupings. So I put them all together as one final group of guys to grade. It'll be Bruce Zimmerman, Cole Sulcer, David Hess, Brandon Kline, and Cody Carroll. Definitely some varying levels of success and really just level of innings thrown this year. We'll talk about all of those guys coming up on the pod as well. But we'll be back with you tomorrow. Until then, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.